And with no further ado, Franklin Sanders, are you with us?
I'm right here.
Well, you've had a busy, busy day.
I've been rode hard and put away wet.
Hey, I was just going to say that.
Everybody in the world wants to buy gold and silver now.
Yep.
And well, it's a lot of people. You know, it's people who I've never talked to before, and they're just thoroughly dispirited by the election. About, you know, most of the ones I talked to today that were new said, I got to do something. So I guess they thought nothing, you know, nothing's going to change. I don't know. But it,
now, was this the first time they had bought gold and silver?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
These really?
New people coming in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, altogether new people. So something's going on, clearly.
We'll bring us up. Let's start where we were last month and tell us what's been going on and just walk us through what the market did on the election.
Can I go back farther than that?
Absolutely.
First of all, I want to talk about the U.S. dollar, okay? Because I think that if you don't know about that, you won't altogether be able to appreciate what's going on. Contrary to expectations, the QE3 and all that stuff, the dollar reached its low in September, and it's been rising ever since. Now, it hasn't been rising fast, but in the last 4 days, it's gotten over its 200-day moving average, which for a market in a bear trend, that is a primary downtrend, is a rally. And it's fair to go to, you know, 82. The interesting thing is that hasn't slowed down gold at all. It's also interesting and shows you exactly how irrational markets can be, that the dollar rose on Obama's election. And
well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, it may not surprise
you. That makes complete sense to me.
You know, he's a vote for inflation. There's no question about that. Not that Romney was not. But the dollar has continued to rally slowly. Very slowly, but it is in an uptrend. Didn't bother gold and silver a bit. But let me go back to, let's look back for about 18 months at gold and silver. And remember that a year ago in September, we got this huge peak over $1,900. Actually, the close was like 1880. And then it went into this long downtrend and formed a big long falling triangle or falling wedge. And we've spent all the rest of the time rocketing back and forth between 1800 and 1525. And it's been miserable. Only in August did gold finally break out of that pattern, rally again to 1800, very strongly rallied from 1800 up to 1800, and then about the 1st of October began a correction. And So that's kind of where we are. We've broken the big downtrend that was of the correction that had been going on for so long, and then now we've gotten to this. We broke out over the downtrend line, went back and sort of made a final kiss goodbye towards the downtrend line. Almost went down to the 200-day moving average. And which is a frequent target of a bull market correction, and then just shot back up, back through the downtrend line, and today closed through the 20-day moving average. It's almost over the 50-day moving average, and what this promises to be is a very, very strong, long-lived rally that will just slice through $1,800 and never slow down. That may go sideways for another week or 2 weeks, but there's a lot of power coming up underneath this. Silver has done basically the same thing. And by the way, gold in euros has made a kind of similar pattern, but gold in euros, has turned back up too and broken up through its downtrend line. So doesn't matter what you look at it in. Gold is rising against all currencies.
Let me just ask you a question. Now, clearly, I feel very confident in in precious metals here, but I also know that the wrangling around the fiscal cliff could put us in a position where we get tremendous volatility and moments when to sort of protect the equity markets and ultimately the bond market, there'll be a real effort to sort of manage that rise. So, you know, I agree that there's tremendous strength underneath it, but I also think over the next 18 months we could also see tremendous volatility. So if you look at 2008,
I don't doubt the volatility, but I think that the fiscal cliff will be basically a non-event. They will push it off. They will argue. They will kick up dust and sand and ruffle their feathers in front of the TV cameras, but in the end, they won't do anything, and they'll push it, kick it down the road another 6 months or another year, whatever it is. Even though you're right, it could very much contribute to the volatility. Still, for all that, I have to say that if gold just performs minimally as it has in the past and less than I think it should, by June it ought to reach $2,300. And that's just based on past performance in the first wave up, which is not the strongest moving wave. It's not the most rapidly rising wave. Now, you know, I mean, I could get my head handed to me on a platter, but that's what I see from right here. And, of course they try to whack gold and silver, and they try to whack it, especially when it's been rising a long time, and that tends to make a market weak and ready for a correction. And that's the time they tend to jump on. And they haven't stopped.
Well, you're much more of an optimist than I am, but I hope you're right and I'm wrong.
Well, I don't think next year is going to be pretty.
I don't disagree that they're going to kick the can, but I do think they're going to hit, you know, that the net result of whatever they do is going to hit the average household by about $2,000 or $3,000 a year at a minimum, and that's not including what the debasement is doing to inflation. So the net to each family's, you know, income statement is going to be ugly.
Now, I don't doubt that's true, and the unemployment is going to increase, and the government will become even more contemptible in the eyes of most of the people than it is today. I mean, surely they've got to start thinking somebody's lying here when all those unemployment figures just suddenly turned up right there before the election. How can you help it?
Well, I think most people, it's funny, at dinner tonight, somebody pointed out that in 2007, according to a New York Times poll, 84% of New Yorkers didn't believe the official story on the election. I mean, on 9/11. And, if you look at the polls, I think the question for most people is, what do I do? You know, so I think that's really where it comes down to. What's my action? What do I do? And I say that yet, and I'm still stunned at the extraordinary time and money that was spent tracking the presidential election and not tracking the state and local elections, because a lot of the impact that comes through on the fiscal cliff is going to come through state and local. So if you have the wrong people in state and local, you're really in trouble.
Well, state and local governments can't print their own money. They're just like Greece and Spain. They have to come up
right with
the money. And that makes them much more vulnerable than the federal government. So, you know, I mean, I've argued with people and tried to explain to them, when Cheney says the debt doesn't make any difference, he's absolutely right from their standpoint. They'll just print
right
more money. They can just keep on doing that forever. They've been doing it since 1913. Goodness gracious, 99 years. Don't tell them it doesn't work.
Well, Franklin, tell us about the silver chart. How does silver look versus gold? Which do you think is more attractive right now?
Whenever you get these corrections, that silver falls faster than gold. So the gold-silver ratio rose to a little over 54, and that's wonderful. You know, there was a gap in the chart there. That's the kind of thing that investors love to see. And that just sets us up even more for a very fast rise in silver to play catch up. And that's what I think it'll do. I mean, I think now you're looking at, once you get over $35.50, you're looking at $40 silver, $44 silver pretty fast. And of course, once you get through $50, well, you know, I mean, it's, at that point, silver will have gotten over its 1980 high. See, gold got over its 1980 high a long time ago. Silver never has. And that's been an argument against silver. Well,
in nominal dollars, not in real dollars.
Right. Well, I know, but people think in nominal dollar terms. So, in any event, once that happens, it's going to be silver will go crazy. But the ratio went up, and it just made a correction, and. It all looks good to me. I mean, it didn't do it. What I'm saying is that gold and silver have not done anything. Silver has not done anything out of the way. There have been no bad surprises here. And this kind of correction is perfectly predictable. The only thing that might happen, and the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous, because there's a rule that a gap in a chart is always filled, and there's a, excuse me, just now, got to sneeze. I'm sorry. There's a little gap in the chart up around 57. So we might see, you know, we might see something happen that would take it up to there before it really turns around and starts rising. But that's a questionable. I'm not I don't much have my eyes on that. I don't think it'll be a big deal. Then we look at the stocks. As you know, both the Dow and the S&P, well, all the indices, just really took a beating after Obama's election. Losing $328 points in one day, which was huge. It was like 2.28%, which is an enormous move. It fell through the established support. It fell through the 200-day moving average. This is just about as negative as you can get.
And the interesting thing about that is completely contradicts the historical pattern, which is if the incumbent wins, you get a rising stock market between election day and the end of the year. So right now this contradicts history.
Well, and there may be another rise back. The big formation that we're seeing in the stock market is called a broadening top, or some people call it the jaws of death. And you've now had a broadening top form within a broadening top. And so it's perfectly possible that even from here, stocks could rally back up to, you know, 13,300, maybe even 13,400 before they go down further. Because the nature of a broadening top, think of a megaphone. And so you get slightly higher highs, but you're getting lower lows at the same time. And eventually it falls through the bottom of that. It goes way on down. The more dramatic change as dramatic as that change in the Dow is, there's been a hugely, hugely dramatic change in the Dow measured in gold. And that broke down yesterday and today to new lows. That's going a lot lower. It's going, but right now it's about 7.4 ounces of gold to buy the whole Dow. That's going down to 2, 1 or 2. Not tomorrow, but you know, before the whole bull market is done. And it started the next phase of that move. As you noted, gold had been outperforming, or stocks had been outperforming gold and silver all year long. And they pretty well, you know, they had. And that's when you see that Dow in gold ratio rise. But it's broken down now. There's no question about that. So,
well, it's U.S. stocks, not global stocks, because Europe and Asia have been hammered.
Stocks have done worse than, if that's what you mean. Yeah, they've done much worse than the U.S. stocks. U.S. And actually, there are only two stock indices, the S&P and Dow, are the only two in the world in the last year or so that have been actually risen.
Well, the thing that concerns me is if you look at the patterns of the quantitative easings, what happens is as the Fed engineers quantitative easing, corporate earnings rise, and as corporate earnings rise, the U.S. equity markets rise, and it's amazing to watch the pattern. And so you see corporate earnings rise, you see gold rise, and then it kind of trades in tandem. And the reality is, if you look at where corporate earnings are, they've risen, they've topped, and if anything, they're projected to come down. And the pressure on corporations now to produce more earnings under difficult circumstances as best is very high. And of course, what's the first thing they do to generate more earnings? They lay people off. So the pressure from investors is very much, the message to boards of directors is we want you to lay more people off, hitting the same time when spending cuts could be trickling down through federal, state, and local government. And in fact, if you look at the most recent employment statistics, it's been the government jobs that have turned net negative, and they've been picking up a lot of the slack for quite some time, just growing more and more government. Of course, that's part of our issue with government expense in this country, because we keep adding employment when, in fact, we don't need government to be doing that. It can be done with far less people. So, it's you're seeing this sort of destruction of employment go on in the economy, and the question is, where does it end? Exactly.
How bad does it get before people grab their pitchforks and rakes and march on Washington?
Well, you and I were talking earlier today about the misallocation of capital, because the problem is you're engineering the death of many, many businesses that are economic and funneling capital to businesses that really don't make economic sense. And so I always liken it to the blood circulating in a body, where you're sending all the blood to the toes and starving the heart, the lungs, and the brain. It makes no sense, but that's what we're doing. So it centralizes, but it doesn't build wealth. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, because we have a lot of good questions tonight. One that's more chart-oriented. Please educate me. The stock charts for gold, silver, and gold-silver ratio on the August 20th show just before the MACD for gold and silver. Also, the gold-silver ratio has MACD around this time. It looks like it would have been a great time to purchase both gold and silver when the MACD was positive. My previous understanding has been to purchase stocks when the MACD was positive and sell stocks when the MACD was negative. I understand if the gold-silver ratio is low, closer to 50, then use my silver to purchase gold, or if the ratio is high, closer to 60, then use my gold to purchase silver. What is the proper way to view the MACD as related to the gold-silver ratio and the relationship to swapping between gold and silver?
I think about so many other things that I don't ever think about the moving average, convergence, divergence in relation to the gold-silver ratio. I'll be honest. I don't really put that. So I can't say anything, because I know that right now probably the top of the range is about 59, and the bottom of the range is like 32. But I also superimpose on that the historical range. And the historical range, I think the next fall that we get will take us down to either 30 or 28, because there's, I don't know why that in the mystery of history that charts tend to return to places that they've been 40, 50 years ago, but they do. And so I think you're going to see that fall. And what I'm going to do, I'm not quite that sophisticated. I just get a target and I get out at that target. And so I haven't looked at what the MACD's been doing, so I just have to go back and look in the past and see what it's done.
Okay, so here's a more difficult one. Even though I believe that Romney would not have done anything different from Obama. I still feel worried, disappointed, and a bit shell-shocked that Mr. Obama was elected. I'm concerned about where the next 4 years go. Where do you think our country will be in 4 years, and what are the advantages and opportunities that we can pursue? Thanks. P.S. I'm working on unplugging from the system and keeping my family's health strong. No GMOs, no vaccines. Stay inside when the chemtrails are spraying. Don't have a TV and try to keep a positive mindset.
Well, not having a TV will help that a lot.
Yes, it will.
You don't have to be exposed to that stuff. So the question is, what's going to happen the next 4 years?
What's going to happen the next 4 years, and where are the advantages and opportunities that someone can pursue?
Well, you know, I think for people who think independently and for people who can disconnect themselves and their income from the whole system, I think they're going to be huge opportunities, because what you're seeing is that this system that runs on government money is breaking down. It's going slower and slower and slower. And so if you can somehow or the other get outside of that into a business where you don't depend on government money and the only thing you have to offer is excellence and competence, you're going to shine. It's going to be easy to make a living. Now, it's going to be more frustrating because heaven only knows what kind of additional regulations and taxes that they're going to throw at us, and that will be bad. There'll be, you know, you'll see more of that annoying police state, you know, checkpoints on the road and, you know, stopping everybody when you go to work, and you've got to have a compulsory ID card and all of that stuff. There'll be a lot more of that. But, like I say, the day after the stock market crashed in 1929, somebody got up and needed breakfast, and somebody got paid to cook it for them. So there are going to be those opportunities, and you just have to keep your eyes open for them. I
always talk about it. One of the most fascinating things is I went back to see who made money and was successful in the Great Depression, and it's amazing how many businesses got going in the Great Depression. It's amazing because, first of all, they had great labor available.
people risked the work, sure. But
well, it's funny.
Risks, big risks then.
What I do find, Franklin, is you have a world, I see it more and more, and sometimes I've said to groups of entrepreneurs looking for investment, I've said, look, there are two economies in this country. One is entrepreneurial wealth, family wealth, people who make their money, you know, one nickel and dime at a time. And they may have hundreds of millions of dollars, but they understand the value of a dime. And then there's the, you know, sort of government money, bubble money. And, you know, it sounds to me like what you want is bubble money, and you're coming to the wrong place. You need to come to a place where, you know, every penny counts. And I still think many, many people are in that bubble mentality, but whether they want to or not, they're going to have the opportunity to shift over the next 4 years. And I think that is an opportunity for people who want to build something in the real economy. So,
right. Well, that real economy, what you're seeing here is an epochal shift from that old economy to a new economy where competence is going to matter, and not connections with the government, and not connections to government money. And if you can do it now, if in this hostile environment you can make a success out of any business, then you'll find it easy 10 years from now.
Yeah, I know the person who asked the question, and they've got a pack of great kids. And one thing I would say, because they're out in California, is get your kids over to a Maker Faire. Do you know what a Maker Faire is, Franklin? It's spelled fair, like F-A-I-R-E, like the Middle Ages. And we had Dale Daugherty, who's the editor of Make magazine, on the Salieri Report earlier this year. There's a whole phenomena coming out of the San Francisco Bay Area where you create hacker spaces where you have shared tools. And, in fact, there's a business now popping up. I just toured one called Tech Shop, where you can go and literally, you know, you can have 3D printers, you can have lasers, you can have welding equipment. You know, it's a huge shop where you can start to make and design and prototype and manufacture your own stuff. And anyway, it's called the Maker Movement, and they have maker fairs where makers get together and share, you know, all their knowledge and ideas. And it goes from things that are very low tech, like doll making, to very high tech with people making their own robots. And so there's quite a huge range. But one of the things that's great about it is it's getting young people educated and learning about how to make things themselves. And if you look at the new manufacturing and fabrication tools, you know, the costs of doing things for ourselves are coming down dramatically. And the ability for small business to now grab these tools and start bringing manufacturing and all sorts of other stuff down even to the local and regional level is phenomenal. But it takes the knowledge and skills. So it's critical that the young people get involved and interested. And so I would say one thing I would definitely do in the next year, not wait for the next 4 years, is, you know, pick up your kids and go hang out at a maker fair. They're all over the world now. So, you know, it's a phenomenon that's kind of exploding. I just think there's going to be tremendous opportunities to learn how to make things for ourselves. Okay, next question. And you're going to faint when I ask you this, Franklin. One question that I don't remember ever coming up between you and Franklin is a deeper discussion on the issue of gold confiscation. What is your assessment of the likelihood of gold confiscation in your slow burn or more extreme collapse scenario? And would this also apply equally to silver? And then he goes on to talk about FDR's gold confiscation. Now, before Franklin says a word, what I will tell you is we've discussed this numerous times. And if you go to the Precious Metals Market Report Library, you'll find under – just do a search for the word confiscation. You'll find several times when we dedicated almost a whole Salieri report to talking about confiscation. But in a nutshell, Franklin, why don't you take a go at that, and I will too.
Well, in a nutshell, this is not 1934. That's the best reply I can give. And let me explain to you, I'm not being smart, Alec. I'm just saying, why did Roosevelt do that in 1934? He did that because he planned to inflate. And at that time, he had to have gold to, because of the way the laws were structured, even for the Federal Reserve to create money, he had to have gold. And so he, it's quote, confiscated gold, and the whole thing was completely illegal and let alone unconstitutional. The law that he purportedly did it under had already expired. So that was part of his plan to inflate the money supply. That's why he wanted the gold. And he actually seized silver, too. Most people don't know that, but he was paying 50 cents when the market rate was about 38 cents, and so nobody was arguing with him when he seized the silver. So, but he never got around to using silver certificates as an instrument of inflation the same way he did with the gold and spending money through the through government projects. So this is not 1934. Gold no longer forms any part of the reserves in the monetary system. And whatever you think about the insiders, the people who run the world, they may be evil, and evil is by definition stupid, but they don't always act stupid. They're very clever. Why would they stir up all that trouble for a very small gain? And the very small gain is whatever amount of gold they would get. And the people who own gold, let me tell you, after 32 years' experience dealing with these people, I'm not going to go try to pry their gold out of their hands. They're going to fight you. It's just that simple. They're going to fight you. And, you know, they'll find a way to fight you. They'll fight you legally or they'll hide. They'll figure out a way to fight. So I think as a practical matter, it would be almost impossible to enforce. And it would have the opposite effect. It would send the price up. It would make gold a black market commodity and double or triple the price overnight. Just as it used to trade back when it was $600-$700 in the United States, it used to trade the Soviet Union for $2,400 an ounce. So this is not 1934, and the purpose of the confiscation in 34 cannot be fulfilled in 2012. So I just don't think they're going to do it. Far, far more likely is they'll say, you know, we're looking here at this $16 trillion pool of wealth that we can get our hands on, which is all of those IRAs, 401ks, maybe some pension funds thrown in there. And what we're going to do is make a law. After all, they control what you can put in an IRA 401k, make a law that you have to invest X percentage in government bonds, U.S. government debt. And they will have effectively locked it up and stolen it from you. So that's what's more likely in my mind than the other. And then you, I don't know where you're going to go next, but I'll just wait and let you comment.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's what Willie Horton said, you go where the money is. So the money's not in gold. It's in the 401ks and the IRAs. And so I think those are much prettier to pluck. And that, to me, if you try and confiscate gold, you just take on a whole bunch of irascible people and you don't get much money. Now, given how leveraged gold is, I could see why they'd want to bring some in. But there are other better ways to do it. I put a post on the blog last week about a freighter that was carrying gold from one place to another, disappearing. And they got somebody got quite a stash with that one. So, I think the pressure's on, but I don't see that as likely. The thing that concerns me a lot more, Franklin, is as you see the effort to get states to adopt gold and silver as legal tender and all sorts of things to sort of build an infrastructure to roll out something at a retail level with gold. My biggest fear is we wake up one day and suddenly gold is embraced by the powers that be. And the next thing you know, the average person who's got – and this is sort of the radical debasement scenario where the average person has their dollars have suddenly declined dramatically in value and they're being called upon to pay – their local property taxes or their carbon tax and precious metals. So, you know, my concern is more the risk of going the other way, which is most people don't have gold and silver, and yet the values get switched suddenly and they're hurt by it.
Well, you're presupposing. Yeah, go ahead. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Well, but I just think confiscation is not – it doesn't buy you anything. It doesn't buy you the kind of things they want. And I've said it many times, if you look at where this is all going, I think that Mr. Global is promoting the general adoption of gold and silver because after you've used fiat currency to steal everything, you want to shift to sound currency. And my fear is the shift to sound currency using gold and silver, whether it's at the retail level or the IMF level, will disadvantage the average person. You know, so I wouldn't worry about confiscation of your gold and silver down the road. If you look at the numbers on debasement of the dollars, your wealth is being confiscated right now today. I mean, we've had significant confiscation every day for the last 20 years, and that's what we need to be worried about because that is the slow burn. That's the predominant, you know, so I'm most concerned about protecting people against, you know, the 100% guaranteed confiscation that they're living with right now, and gold and silver is one of the few ways to do that. So, you know, but we live in a world, you know, if you put up drones and everything else, we live in a world where our minds can be confiscated, our bodies can be confiscated, our gold can be confiscated, and I'm a lot more worried about our minds and bodies being confiscated than the gold.
Right. You're presupposing the same thing that I presuppose, which is that in the end, they must return to a gold standard because they've played the inflationary game as long as it can be played. And so at some point, not necessarily soon, in fact, probably not soon, that will happen. And there are several reasons to think that they're already beginning to promote that alternative because, you know, the standard on international – The International Banking Standards Commission, whatever the name of it, is that meets at the BIS and Basel has recommended that gold be moved from a Tier 3 asset valued at 50% to a Tier 1 asset valued at 100% in bank reserves. And the Federal Reserve sent out a letter to member banks asking for comments on that. So right there, you know, that's a way that you're talking about bringing gold back into the system.
Right.
If you allow it to be not only bank reserves, but tier one bank reserves valued at 100% of market. So
right.
I think that's the long-term deal, but between then and now, there'll be an enormous confiscation by inflation. So.
Right. Let me a couple more good questions. I inherited a part interest in a parcel of rangeland. The other heirs want to liquidate this year. The period under a sale contract could last months. I'm nervous about holding what is effectively a sizable futures contract to buy dollars. I worry about a downdraft or holiday in the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar while in contract. Have you suggestions for how to eliminate or hedge that risk? Is my worry unwarranted? Call options on gold futures are only as good as the integrity and solvency of the exchanges and brokerages that float them. Okay, now I've got a strong opinion on this, but I'll let you go first.
Well, so there's a period of time when they're going to be clearing the sale. Is that it?
I'm presuming that they'll lock in a sale, but it will be a while before the closing. So between you lock in a dollar price and the closing, you've got some period of time that could last months.
Right. Well, you know, if they're worried about that, clearly brokerage firms are no longer reliable because of what happened with Man Financial and so forth. So, but they're the only thing you've got. You know, it's the only game in town. So one of the things that you might do, I would not be in favor of options on the dollar or the dollar index. More I would favor buying options on silver or on gold if I wanted to hedge it that way. But the problem with the dollar is that it's just so manipulated that, you know, you can be absolutely right, and from a technical standpoint, the chart will say one thing, and then they wake up one morning and they've got a political heartburn, and they go the other way. So it's very
right.
Unpredictable, whereas I'm very comfortable about the longer-term trend of silver and gold.
Well, let me take a shot at this, because I'm comfortable with brokerages. I'm not comfortable with futures, because if you break down and look at what happened at MF Global and a couple of the others, the you know, there's a distinct difference between what happens in the brokerages and what happens in the futures. But put that aside. I think the lesson is it's very important the quality of the people you do business with. And if the former chairman of Goldman Sachs takes over the firm where your brokerage account is, you really need to move it. But put that aside. I think if your closing is going to be in the next year and a half, I wouldn't worry. I think there are more ways to get yourself in trouble trying to hedge it and the complexity of hedging. And I think the dollar is going to be relatively strong for some period of time here. Just as it's been strong in the last couple of weeks. So the dollar's been strong this year. And I think if you look at what's going on globally, it's scheduled to be relatively strong in the next year. So I've seen people in the last 2 years sort of run up their expenses and nightmare trying to do these kinds of things. And I would just keep it simple and get the thing closed as quickly as possible. But I wouldn't worry about the dollar in the short run. Now, I hope I'm wrong.
Sometimes you can write something into a contract, a sales contract, for instance. If you're concerned about the time lag in closing, then one of the things that you ought to put in the contract is we don't want a long time lag. We want to close within 30 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And eliminate it that way. But just a general statement about hedging that people don't seem to realize is you always lower your profit when you hedge by the cost of the hedge, if nothing else. So
right.
Hedging is not cost-free. It right. caps your profits by the cost of the hedge. And if there's a loss on the hedge, then by the cost plus the loss.
We got a very good question about mining companies and how mining companies trade. And I'm not gonna respond tonight, but I wrote a note to Paul Ferguson, who's my favorite mining investor and mining stock investor, and asked him if he would write a little blog post about it, which he did, and we'll post it tomorrow. It'll be up on the subscriber-only part of the Solari Report. And he also sent a great chart that sort of shows the behavior of sort of stock valuations as the company moves from, you know, from startup through the different phases of development of a mining company. And that's up with the charts that Franklin sent in on the in the subscriber space. Another question that I got a week ago about the Benghazi situation, I've researched it. I've looked into it. There's clearly a story there, but trying to get the truth is probably impossible. Interesting, though, a comment posted about it on Blackwater's website. They came out with a very definitive position, and I think I posted it at the blog. So if you want to take a look, check out the statement about Benghazi at the Blackwater site. Another question, Franklin, although we've covered a little bit of this, by the time you do your session, you will know the election results. Do you see the election result as impacting the precious metals markets?
Well, they did positively. And they might have, you know, if Romney had been elected, there might have been a transient negative effect. But the thing that you have to realize is that this was already priced into the market. I mean, the correction that I spoke of that's been going on for 14 months, that was already there, and that was going to work itself out. So it wouldn't have mattered much who was going to be elected. I think maybe Obama's election caused it to rise a little sooner than Romney's would have, but I think it was priced in anyway.
I think that it was not so much who won, but I think the election process combined with other things that have been going on over the last 30 days has really been a very sobering experience for America. And it doesn't surprise me you're getting a significant flow of purchasing. I think people are looking for a way to, you know, to get their hands on a store of value that they can put in their pocket and walk down the road if they need to. So I think they're starting to realize the fundamental or the speed of change that's coming. And so I think it's going to educate more people to the role that precious metals plays. So I think, you know, QE3 and the election are both going to be, I think they're both building to help create the kind of primary trend that you're talking about earlier this evening. Okay, quickly, question about how to find a financial institution for CDs. We have a bank intimate page with a really great little article on how to find a great local bank. Another question about Robert Holmes is completely dropped off the radar. That's a reference to the father-son team, or the son who was arrested for the shootings in Denver, the father being involved with the computer programming with some pretty sensitive financial computer programming. My guess is that's dropped off the radar because the sort of goals of that operation weren't achieved. The result is Americans have become much more dug in about the importance of owning a gun. And so I think that really has dropped off the radar, and I think it's going to stay off the radar. A couple more questions that we don't have time to address, but again, thank you for a lot of really great questions. One more question on the what can I do, what are the advantages and opportunities? I would just we're going to repost my the article that we wrote called Coming Clean, which is 21 steps you can take to kind of start building an authentic life, not getting drained by Mr. Global and your television set. So we'll put that up on the blog. And also on the blog, we regularly post things on new technology. And I do see a lot happening, as well as the crowdfunding, the coming changes in crowdfunding. The SEC is going to promulgate regulations in 2013 for permitting crowdfunding to be used to do private equity and allow non-accredited investors to start investing in their local businesses. Right now, if I'm you know, in my county, it's pretty easy to buy hard narcotics or to put money in the lottery, but it's illegal to invest in a local business. And God help me if I try and do it in a liquid form. So hopefully that's going to get rebalanced in 2013. It turns out, Franklin, that for the first 8 minutes of the Saleri Report tonight, the music was playing instead of people hearing me. So after we get to the end tonight, I'm going to repeat the first 8 minutes, and you're perfectly free to not hold on as I do it. But before you go, let me just mention